first take a second and think about the neighborhood where you live. Maybe it has apartment buildings or a few duplexes, or maybe it's a neighborhood made up entirely of detached, single-family homes. Turns out that for a lot of cities in the U.S., most of the residential land is zoned exclusively for single-family homes, and some cities and states are starting to change that in the midst of an affordable housing crisis. Emily Badger covers urban policy for The Upshot at The New York Times. Emily, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into what's going on today, can you talk a little bit about how we ended up with so much of our residential land zoned for only individual houses and, by the way, ones that don't bump up against each other?
Yeah, so single-family zoning is a 100-year-old idea in America. It really took off across the country after the Supreme Court gave the green light to local communities to adopt this in their zoning policies. And what we see sort of in communities all across the country starting in the 20s and kind of accelerating across the 20th century is that, you know, newer built sort of sunbelt suburban communities that were built sort of in the post-war period were entirely built around this idea that, you know, all of the residential housing should be detached single-family homes. You know, everything should be exclusively that. There should be fewer apartment buildings. To the extent that there are apartment buildings, they should be separated from single-family neighborhoods. But the other thing that we saw was that kind of older, denser cities downzoned repeatedly over the years. And that means that they effectively said that things that we used to build in the past are illegal now. You can't build them anymore. So if in the past you might have had a duplex, a small four-unit apartment building next to a single-family home, next to a triplex, a lot of communities effectively said, we don't want to build like that anymore. And it got to the point where, you know, when we were looking at data in cities across the country recently this spring, you know, we see that in 75-80% of a lot of fairly large, including older cities in America, their residential land, that much of it is devoted exclusively to single-family zoning.
Right. You've got some very stark maps in your piece at The Upshot showing a variety of cities where, as you say, 70 to 90% is only this. It's very striking, didn't you think, to see that visually?
Yeah, I mean, even I was surprised by the extent of it. And I think that we tend to think, even people who are fairly sort of savvy about the topic of zoning, tend to think of single-family zoning as primarily a suburban issue. It's mostly suburban communities who say, you know, no thank you to apartment buildings. But in fact, you know, we saw 94% of the residential land zone single-family in San Jose, 84% of it in Charlotte, 81% of it in Seattle. So even in, you know, central cities, including some older cities, this is an idea that has really come to dominate how we think about neighborhoods.
There's some pushback you report, and we'll get into a couple specific examples in a minute, but why are people raising the red flag over this dominance of single-family housing as the way to zone communities?
So there are three different things that are happening at the moment that are all kind of converging right now. One of them is that particularly on the coast, there are communities where they're having a housing crisis. The cost of housing is incredibly high. They're having a housing shortage, and they're struggling to find places to build more housing. And so in those communities, single-family zoning appears to be making it harder to build more housing. If we have set aside all of this land for nothing but detached single-family homes, you know, how are we going to fit more housing onto the land that we have? So there's the housing crisis on one hand. Then there is this increasing concern around the environment and climate change, that one solution to them, not the only solution, but one possible solution would be to build denser cities, to enable more people to live without cars, to not be as dependent on cars and the emissions that they produce. So a lot of communities are talking more about that than they ever have in the past. And then the third issue that came up in a number of cities we looked at was concerns about racial inequality that are really kind of baked into the fabric of how we have designed communities. So racial segregation in some communities has really been sort of buttressed over the years by zoning laws, by these maps that say that, you know, more affordable housing, multifamily housing will be sort of segregated over here, single-family housing and good schools will be segregated over here. So a number of communities like Minneapolis and Charlotte are very explicitly having a conversation about racial injustice when they're talking about getting rid of single-family zoning.
Emily Badger is with us. She covers urban policy for The Upshot at The New York Times. In a recent piece, she looked at single-family housing. It's the dominant zone in many communities, means that's the only thing you can build there. Some communities are pushing back and changing that now. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should the single-family detached, meaning not touching the house next door, should that be the mode, the perfect storm, the great thing that we want in all of our communities? Or do we need to allow, as some communities are, more development of duplexes, apartment buildings, and more? Call in at 800-642-1234. Emily, take us across Wisconsin's western border to Minneapolis. What's happening there?
So Minneapolis in December became the first major city in America to say, you know what, we're just going to stop doing this. We're going to take all of the lots that are designated single family in our city, and in Minneapolis this covers about 70% of their residential land, and we're going to say, okay, from now on you can put 2 units there or you can put 3 units there. They've effectively opened up all of these neighborhoods to building sort of very mildly denser housing. We're not talking about putting 10-story apartment buildings in these communities. But when they did this, it was really the sort of shocking thing because no other city like Minneapolis had done it on that scale before. And a lot of other communities started to say, oh, is this possible? How do we talk to the public about this? You know, there's tremendous opposition oftentimes from homeowners to this idea. And yet here is a large American city that managed to, with fairly overwhelming support of their city council, say, you know what, we're just not going to do this anymore.
An interesting point you reported on was that they did this everywhere in the city, whereas an approach in the past has been, oh, how about that neighborhood? And then that neighborhood might fight back. Oh, how about that neighborhood over there? They did it all at once. Did that address some of those local concerns?
Yeah, I mean, the much more typical way that cities grow more dense over time is that, you know, a developer would say, I would like to upzone this one parcel, or let's reconsider, you know, just this one corridor. And it would be done in this very kind of targeted piecemeal way. And Minneapolis basically said, we actually think that it will be easier to do the entire city than to have sort of targeted fights with individual neighborhoods, especially because there's this kind of history in communities across the United States, not just in Minneapolis, that the communities that have kind of the least political power are often the ones that get more density sort of pushed onto them. And, you know, typically whiter, higher income communities have greater capacity to push against this and say, no, we don't want this. So you have these inequities built into, just doing a little bit of upzoning here and there. And so Minneapolis said, no, we're just going to do it everywhere. And we hope that that sort of minimizes the fear that people have that all of the density is going to flow just into my community, or that you've picked my community and not another community.
Well, that's Minneapolis doing this a year ago. Now, fresh in the news, the state of Oregon just voted, I think it was yesterday, to change their laws. What happened there?
Yeah, so Minneapolis felt striking because this was an entire city doing this, and now Oregon has gone and sort of one-upped them by doing effectively this across an entire state. And so Oregon is the first state to ever do this. They passed a law yesterday, it still needs to be signed by the governor, that effectively says in every city of at least 25,000 people across the entire state of Oregon, duplexes are now going to be allowed on single-family lots. And in, I'm sorry, every city larger than 10,000 people. And every city larger than 25,000 people, you know, they want to legalize what they call missing middle housing, you know, this sort of middling thing in between single family homes and larger apartment buildings. So things like 4-unit buildings, little kind of cottage clusters. And it passed there, you know, this is a fairly remarkable thing for a state to do, but it passed by a fairly comfortable margin and was supported by both Republicans and Democrats in their state legislature.
We're talking to Emily Badger from the Upshot at the New York Times about why more cities and now states are taking another look at single-family zoning laws and the role they're playing in a housing affordability crisis. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you live in a neighborhood that's all single-family houses? Do you like it that way? Or would you be open to things like duplexes or small apartment buildings? If you live in a neighborhood that's not all single-family units, what do you think of that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or join the conversation on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Emily Badger of the New York Times. She's with us to look at single-family zoning regulations in the U.S., how they affect housing costs, and why some communities are changing the rules. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like the idea that a lot of residential areas, especially in cities, are zoned single-family housing only? Or do you think that should change, some more density allowed, whether that's a duplex, a four-unit, or bigger? Call in at 800-642-1234. And do you have trouble finding housing you can afford where you want to live? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. Marcus is on the line in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, Rob. So I do remodeling and construction. I own my own company, and I work for six landlords. They have 103 units between them in Milwaukee and Waukesha County. I also went to UW-Milwaukee and studied political science and history, and I have 2442 credits done towards the Master's of Public Administration, so I've had classes on zoning and whatever else. This is a crisis that's going on around the country for affordable housing, and I think if they took and rezoned a lot of the family, like the single-family units, and said, you know, you can take and build out the upstairs of that Cape Cod and rent it or make it into a duplex, I think one of the ways that we could alleviate some of the concern of homeowners is if we were to take and change the law and say, yes, you can do that, but you can't be an absentee landlord. We want you to be an owner occupied for at least one of the units, but feel free to bring in some extra income and provide some more affordable housing.
Marcus, thanks a lot for the call. And I think, Emily, that came up a little bit in your piece, the idea of, okay, it's a single family house and you can rent out the room over the garage to Fonzie or whatever. Is that something you've seen communities work on?
Yeah, I mean, a somewhat less dramatic idea than literally saying we're going to rezone the entire city would be to pass a law, which some communities have done, Seattle is talking about doing this today, that would allow what are called accessory dwelling units. So this is something like a backyard cottage, an in-law suite, a granny flat, literally just telling single-family homeowners you can stick a small second unit in your backyard or you can turn your basement into one. And as Marcus alluded to, one of the benefits of this is that it doesn't fundamentally change what these neighborhoods look like if you're walking down the street. I mean, you may not realize that that house right there has a unit in the basement or it has a small unit in the backyard. So I think that's absolutely, you know, sort of a smart policy solution, and it's something that a lot of cities are talking about. And to say, you know, let's let people build accessory dwelling units sounds a little less dramatic of a change than saying we're going to upzone everyone's single-family neighborhood.
Marcus, thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Becky with us now in Beloit. Becky, hi.
Hey, I was just wondering how, well, aside from curb appeal, this would affect the property values of the homes that are, you know, could possibly be turned into these rental units or duplexes.
Becky, thanks a lot for the call. And Becky, Emily is hitting on a concern of a lot of people in neighborhoods that could be rezoned, right?
Yeah, this is a really, really excellent question that sort of sits at the center of a lot of debates about this idea. People are very fearful that changes to their neighborhoods, if they have a home in an existing single-family neighborhood, that their property values will decline as a result of this. But we really don't have sort of definitive data about what will happen in these communities in the future. You know, another way of looking at this is that if you own a home in a single-family neighborhood, the city is effectively sort of giving you a new property right in that they're telling you, now we're going to let you build another unit or build two units. And so in that sense, there's an argument to be made that actually this isn't going to lower your property value. It could potentially raise it because now you can do more things with your property than we allowed you to do in the past. But I think it will take some time looking back on a city like Minneapolis that does this at scale in order to really be able to say, what does this do to people's property values? And it's entirely possible that it just won't do very much to people's property values at all, because what we'll see is that, you know, maybe one duplex will go in, you know, on a block, or one four-unit apartment building will go in a neighborhood that's slightly larger than that. And that's really not going to be a very dramatic change, I don't think.
Becky, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Emily Badger from the New York Times about zoning. Single-family housing zoning, it's the dominant way of doing things in a lot of cities, a lot of communities around the country. Some cities and states are changing that. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts. Emily, we heard from Leslie on Facebook. Leslie says, adding more people increases traffic. That's Leslie's concern. Do we see concerns about things like traffic and other infrastructure if when we're increasing population density?
Absolutely. I mean, in every community where I have seen this debate play out, we have on the one hand people who are for higher density making very kind of sweeping arguments about making housing more affordable, making communities more fair, addressing climate change, righting kind of historical injustices. And then on the other hand, the people who are opposed to this are making much more kind of concrete quality of life objections. They are worried about whether or not they will be able to still park on their street, if their streets will become overly crowded, if their children's schools will become crowded, literally if the sewer system underneath these single-family neighborhoods will be able to handle the capacity of more people living there. So there's something of a disconnect in the debate that communities are having around this, and that on the one hand, a lot of people are worried about very, very concrete quality of life objections, and on the other hand, people are saying, well, you know, in order to achieve these bigger, more important goals in our community, perhaps, you know, we're going to have to make some concessions on some of those topics.
Let's go back to our callers now. Max is with us in Two Rivers. Max, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to say I think that there should be kind of less focus on building, you know, suburbs and single-family homes in favor of building maybe 10-story, you know, apartment buildings that can fit many, many different families in just a fraction of the space. Because you see all the time, you know, they're clearing 100 acres of forest when you could just clear like 7, make the apartment building, and, you know, that 100 acres doesn't need to be gone just because you want to fit a suburb community in somewhere.
Max, thanks a lot for the call. Max echoes Jacqueline on Facebook, who says we should be building up, not out. Emily, that's one of the arguments in favor of this change, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of pro-environmental argument that single-family zoning has contributed to sprawl because it's meant that if we need to make room for more people, there's nowhere to build housing for them except on the periphery. And so, you know, the suburbs just keep moving farther and farther out into greenfield or into farmland. But the specific argument that a lot of people are making about these single-family neighborhoods is that, you know, it's insufficient to just build a lot of apartment buildings downtown. We really need to be creating more options in neighborhoods all across the city so that, you know, we're giving families with more moderate incomes a chance to go to a good school in an otherwise wealthy neighborhood, or we're giving families access to parks that primarily exist in single-family neighborhoods. There's some arguments for this that are not just about creating more housing supply, but specifically about dispersing it around the city.
Max, thanks for the call. Pat joins us now in Three Lakes. Pat, hi.
Hi, how are you? I live in the town of Three Lakes. We have 18 lakes on our chain of lakes in the town of Three Lakes. We basically have about about 100 mile of frontage, and we have a lot of single family residential homes. We determined we wanted single family residential homes about 30 or 40 years ago, so we'd have quiet neighborhoods. We have a lot of absentee owners now in the state of Wisconsin, and its brilliance decided that they'd eliminate zoning in the state of Wisconsin as far as single-family homes go. We used to have to have, if somebody wanted to rent in a single-family area, it had to be 30 days or more. Now they decided it was down to 7 days, and it doesn't give the neighbors any options to discuss the fact that now they're in a resort area where they used to be in a single-family residential area.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. I don't know if you know the specifics here in Wisconsin, Emily, but Pat points to an important point. This could be a complicated network of local, maybe county, and definitely state laws, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, in most states, zoning is up to the local community. It has fundamentally been an issue of local control across America going back, you know, all the way to the beginning of the 20th century. But there are certainly some places where the state exerts more control than it does in most parts of the country. So Oregon is an example of that, for instance. You know, they've long had these urban growth boundaries around their metro areas that say, you know, you cannot expand beyond this particular boundary because we want to prevent places from sprawling. We want to protect greener spaces outside of cities.
Thanks a lot for the call, Pat. Emily, one issue I wanted to get into before we run out of time. In Oregon, you reported that AARP was on board with these changes. Why would they be interested in this zoning change?
So they're on board with this because they would like the ability of older residents to be able to, quote, age in place. So this is the idea that as you get older, you know, you should be able to stay in your community where you have connections, where you have raised your children, where all of your friends are. You shouldn't have to necessarily move to a nursing home or an assisted living facility or something like that. And the idea that we talked about earlier of something like an accessory dwelling unit is particularly appealing to people who are concerned about aging in place because, you know, it creates this scenario where you could have multiple generations of a family occupy a property. You know, maybe your older parents come to live with you and occupy the unit in your backyard and families can take care of each other, or, you know, someone who is like a live-in home health aide could occupy a small unit in the backyard. So to them, that's a way of sort of converting housing to the housing that an older population is going to need without literally having to move them.
In our last minute or so, Emily, we've seen Minneapolis and Oregon. What parts of the country are you watching for that may make changes next?
Well, this is particularly hot on the West Coast because all of the issues that I mentioned are really converging right there, and they have a particularly dire housing crisis. But I also have heard from a number of cities that sort of surprised me that took a look at Minneapolis and said, oh, maybe we should be having a conversation about this too. So Charlotte, North Carolina, for instance, is a place where I would not have predicted they're having this conversation, and they're starting to have it there also.
Emily, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Emily Badger of The Upshot with The New York Times. She was with us today to talk about why a number of cities and in some cases states are reconsidering single-family zoning laws, in part because of a crunch on affordable housing in many communities. Still time for you to join in with your thoughts and maybe your experiences with this. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us what you think of these ideas. And if you have tried to buy or rent in your community and had trouble doing it, or if you're on the other end of things, a developer yourself or in city government, love to hear from you. Share your thoughts over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.